And thank you also, Ms. Rumbelow. And the next case for argument is Witzke versus Femmel. Ms. Schneider.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Maggie Schneider. I represent the appellant, Michael Witzke, in this appeal. In this suit, this Section 1983 suit for deliberate indifference to medical needs, the events that are relevant all occurred while the plaintiff, Michael Witzke, was on probation. Therefore, the Prison Litigation Reform Act's exhaustion requirement, which applies only to suits that are about prison conditions, was not applicable. However, the district court dramatically expanded the scope of this exhaustion requirement and applied it to
Witzke's claims. What about the choice program? Now, wasn't he actually incarcerated on the prison grounds in that choice program?
The choice program is housed at the Racine Correctional Institution. However, it's a treatment program that apparently probationers
I know, but look, prisons have infirmaries, right? And those are treatment units. But you're still in prison when you're in the infirmary.
True, but a person sent...
And Leavenworth has a federal prison, which I think is mainly or has a large hospital for prisoners. And if you were ill when you were sentenced, you could spend your whole sentence in the hospital at Leavenworth. You'd still be in prison.
True, but...
So what difference does it make?
Well, in that situation, you've been sentenced
call it treatment.
To prison. You're a prisoner...
He's a prisoner. He's actually in the prison. It's just something called choice. It's just another building on the prison premises.
He's in the prison, but he's not a prisoner at that prison.
You have only two types of people in a prison. You have prisoners and you have staff. Not staff. He's obviously a prisoner.
No, I think in this situation you
also... You have people come in from the outside and go into this choice program?
Yes. Mr. Witzke was a probationer who was brought in from the outside to participate in this program.
Well, no. He's brought in because his alternative is to have his... His practical alternative is to go to prison. You don't have people who don't have any involvement with the criminal justice system deciding to incarcerate themselves in this prison to get drug treatment, do you? Maybe you do.
If you look at the form that he signed, he said he voluntarily agreed to participate in this program.
Well, yes, but that's voluntary. It's like saying, look, you can go to Alcatraz or you can go to Marion. So sign a form saying which prison you want to go to.
Well, the difference
you'd
there
is... You'd still be a prisoner.
But there, that's because you're choosing between two prisons.
You're choosing between two buildings in the prison. One is called choice and one is called, dealing with the cement or
something. I'm sorry, Anna. Do you have a question?
I'm interested in the Outagamie jail because when he was placed there in September and early October of 99, wasn't he essentially accused of violating the terms of his probation, and therefore wouldn't the exhaustion requirement apply at least to his time in the county jail?
I think that that's correct. I think I'd have to concede that at that point when he's in an actual jail that he is a prisoner and any claims relating to that jail are claims with respect to prison conditions. However, none of the defendants are officials in the county jail. They're all probation officials, and I mean, to the extent that you can parse out what portion of his claims might have to do with the time in that jail, I suppose he should have exhausted with respect to those claims. But most of his claims all have to do with his probation officer. They have to do with an order that he detoxed from methadone, which was made when he was, in fact, solely on probation. And the order...
He doesn't have any complaints about how he was treated in his choice program?
He does have complaints about the choice program.
Okay. Well, that's not directed against probation officers. That's directed against the people in prison.
It's directed against people who are working in the choice program. And it's not clear from the record that the people running the choice program are actually employees of the prison, such as a warden of the prison. And it actually, it sounds
what
like
are
these
they
people
employees of?
they're employees of this treatment program that probably is run by the Department of Corrections, but it's still a treatment program. And one of the people, I think, is a social worker who's just dealing with these treatment problems.
Prisons have social workers working for them.
You haven't had a chance to respond because this argument was contained in the gray brief. But if Mr. Witski got jail credit for the time spent in the choice program, doesn't that suggest he was incarcerated for that period of time?
Well, actually, the Wisconsin sentence credit statute gives jail credit for time spent in custody, which can include broader types of confinement than being actually in prison. And in fact, this court has recognized that distinction in the habeas context, where it talks about how you can be in custody when you're in probation, but that's distinct from being physically imprisoned, which is what.
Well, do they give time served credit if you're in a halfway house?
Not in this case, they did not. He did not receive any.
Well, then they're not defining custody as broadly as they could, right?
Well,
but custody, for purposes of habeas corpus, would include things like parole. And clearly, they're not giving time served credit to anybody who isn't actually locked up 24 hours a day. And in the choice program, you are locked up, and in a halfway house, you roam around during the day, just have to come back at night.
True, but they're still giving time credit for time spent in custody as opposed to being in prison, and
look, that's not right, because custody has special connotations, at least in federal habeas corpus, much broader than anything that Wisconsin is doing. So in Wisconsin, you don't get credit for a halfway house. You do when you're in the choice program. That makes the choice program sound very much like a prison, especially since it's in the prison. It's like the infirmary.
Well, I think the key thing to consider with respect to the choice program is that he went there voluntarily, and in fact, he was involuntarily terminated.
Suppose you're in prison, and you go to prison and say, look, I'm frightened, and I'm afraid other prisoners are going to beat me up or something, so I would like to be, in segregation. So the prison says, all right, we have to sign a form, say voluntarily, in segregation, and you do that. Well, you're still in prison.
Yes, but you were in prison to begin with, and you agreed to move to another area of the prison. You didn't agree to go to enter a prison setting. And if I could just make, with respect
but
to...
But he enters this prison setting because, given the options facing him because of his probation violation, this looks like the most attractive form. The most attractive thing is actually to become a prisoner, because once he's in the choice program, he can't walk out.
Well, I don't know that the record actually reflects that he couldn't walk out. It's possible that he could have terminated his involvement in that program, and that probably likely would have led to revocation proceedings, but it wasn't until his probation was actually revoked that he became a prisoner. And I'd also like to note
that sounds very, very hyper-technical and also remote from the purposes of the Prisoner Litigation Reform Act, which is to deal with prisoners who are complaining about prison conditions. It doesn't matter whether it's the infirmary, the segregation unit, the soccer field, or what have you, or this treatment program for the drug addict. It's all part of the prison, whether it's called this or that or voluntary.
Well, the plain language of the Prison Litigation Reform Act is getting at prisoners who are incarcerated in a prison, not a probationer who's participating in
but
a treatment program.
Look, you're not looking at the purpose of the statute. How is the purpose of the statute served by making this, by distinguishing between the choice program and the rest of the prison?
Well, the purpose of the prison, there's many purposes, but one of the key ones is because prisoners who are just in the general prison population have a lot of time on their hands, and they have time to bring frivolous lawsuits. So
PLRA is not limited to prisoners in the general prison population. It includes people who are locked up 23 hours a day, and they also have rights, and people in hospital beds.
Well, even if the court determines that this suit is about prison conditions, despite that the choice program involves prison conditions, even though it was voluntary, It should be noted that Whiskey has made a number of allegations that indicate that he didn't actually have any available remedies, and the district court didn't actually address those allegations, and this circuit has recognized that it's possible for there to be legal remedies. Perhaps the client complaint process was technically available to him, but he's alleged that basically if he would have raised any complaints that he would have been terminated from the choice program for doing that, and also that he wasn't told about or given access to the prison complaint procedure. So if he's treated as a prisoner in the Racine Correctional Institution, then probably we should look to whether he had access to the inmate complaint review system there, and he has alleged that he did not, and the district court did not address that issue, and neither did the defendants, and this is their defense that they have deferred in the pleading and proving. So given that this is a motion to dismiss, there should at least be a remand for further development on that issue. I see that I've eaten up all my time. Are there any further questions?
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Schneider. Ms. Schwab?
May it please the court, my name is Hillary Schwab and I represent the state defendants.
Forgive me for doing this to you, but would you respond to the last point that Ms. Schneider just made first? I'd appreciate that.
The point regarding remand?
Yes.
Is that the one?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I submit that remand is not necessary and that the information that we have is sufficient. It's difficult because I haven't talked about the substance, but as to the moorings issue, the halfway house, Whiskey himself pleads that he was forced to go to mooring.
Her argument is, with regard to the choice program, even if we say that's imprisonment, the judge didn't address the adequacy of his remedies, his administrative remedies, and therefore whether he had a duty of exhaustion.
I believe that the district court correctly noted that Whiskey had pleaded himself out of court as to those claims, as to the availability. In his complaint, he indicates that there is an available administrative remedy at his prison and that he failed to utilize that remedy. Now, at this point, when he filed the complaint, he was at Dodge Correctional, and the available remedy would be the inmate complaint review system. That review system applies to all claims about prison conditions in state facilities. Both Racine Correctional, where he was when he was in the choice program, and Dodge Correctional are state correctional facilities. That process was available to him when he was in the choice program, and it was available to him when he was at Dodge to challenge what happened to him in the choice program. He's admitted this.
Well,
Ms.
Schneider says that he was afraid that if he used the complaint procedure, choice people would get angry with him and throw him out.
It's true that Whiskey argues this, but Whiskey's counsel cited no affirmative pleadings in making this argument, only unsupported statements in the brief. And that doesn't suffice to override the clear availability of the inmate complaint review system. In Massey v. Wheeler, this court affirmed dismissal for failure to exhaust, even when a prisoner pleaded that, quote, any administrative remedies that are claimed to exist are in fact a sham.
How about when he was in the moorings program?
In the moorings program, he had the probation remedy in DOC Regulation 32811 available to him. Now, he may argue, and I believe he has, that this is no longer available to him once he's incarcerated. However, to the extent that that's true, that's purely a situation of his own doing. He was in that program in February 2000, and his probation was not revoked until December 2000. The availability for 10 months is sufficient, and
When did his complaint ripen during that period?
Excuse me?
When did his complaint ripen during that period? He had to have a complaint before he filed.
His complaint with regard to mooring ripened in February 2000.
Is there a time period stated in the probation regulations as to when complaint has to be filed?
There is not. However, to wait 10 months and not file a complaint is latches, and it's his responsibility to do this. This court has observed in Perez v. Wisconsin DOC that, quote, Section 1997E would not be worth much if prisoners could evade it simply by asking for relief that the administrative process is unable to provide. Similarly, the exhaustion requirement would not be worth much if prisoners could evade it by declining to take advantage of grievance procedures until they're no longer available. Also, in Pozo v. McCautry, this court noted the importance of timeliness of filing. In that case, the court held that allowing a prisoner untimely to exhaust would allow a prisoner to, quote, exhaust state remedies by spurning them, which would defeat the objectives of the PLRA. In this case, that's exactly what Witski has done. He waited 10 months, during which time 32811 was available to him, and he declined to use it. For him to now say it wasn't available is to say, I spurned it, I waited the 10 months, and because of my spurning, you should say the exhaustion requirement doesn't apply. This would be akin to a situation where a prisoner files a complaint while in prison, gets released a week later, and when the claim gets dismissed for failure to exhaust, he says, I'm no longer a prisoner. I can't use that remedy. It's the prisoner's responsibility to take advantage of the remedy when it is available to him, and he had 10 months to do so, which is more than sufficient.
So is it your position that all halfway houses are prisons within the meaning of the PLRA?
It's my position that in this situation,
what's special about the situation?
Well, I think it's significant that Witski's placement in mooring was an alternative to revocation. As this court noted, he basically had two choices, outright imprisonment.
Well, that's always true with halfway houses.
That may be true. I mean, certainly when somebody's there as a term of probation, then I would say, yes, it is confinement. And by being confined.
Well, why would it be any different if it's just the tail of your sentence, which is the more common? You know, you're sentenced to 5 years in prison, but when you get out, you have to spend 6 months in a halfway house.
Again, I would say in that situation, it constitutes prison conditions under the
PLRA. So there is no halfway house. That isn't a prison, in your view.
It depends on the person in the halfway house.
Why does it depend on the person? What are you talking about?
Excuse me?
What does it mean, depends on the person? It
doesn't
matter.
Some people who are not within the correctional system.
Well, they're not in halfway houses.
Well, then in that case, yes, I would say
I understand. Yeah, you could have someone in something called a halfway house that was completely civil, just going there because you have some people with mental problems who live in a halfway house. Yeah. That's fine. But you're saying anyone who is in a halfway house as a result of a collision with the criminal justice system, as to that person, it's a prison.
For purposes of the PLRA, yes.
But when he spent time in the halfway house and the choices drug program, he was doing so in lieu of having his probation revoked, right?
Yes, he was.
So in what sense does he meet the statutory definition of prisoner during those two periods of time? Because here, the PLRA defines a prisoner to include a person who is accused of, convicted of, sentenced for, or adjudicated delinquent for violations of the terms and conditions of probation.
I see that my red light is on. May I briefly address the question?
You have to.
Okay, I'm happy to do so. The PLRA has three different requirements. One, that the plaintiff is a prisoner at the time he files his complaint. Two, that the claim is about prison conditions. And three, that there are available administrative remedies. The prisoner requirement refers to the plaintiff's status when he files the complaint, not his status when the claims occurred. The prison conditions issue...
Well, that really doesn't make sense. That's ridiculous. So if you're in prison and you're complaining that you were hit by a truck by a state employee, you have to exhaust your remedies?
No, of course, it has to be about prison conditions, but the definition...
It's about your conditions when you were out on probation.
The claim has to be about conditions of confinement. And conditions of confinement...
Are you going to treat probation as confinement?
I treat probation when you're in a halfway house where you
have
to sit there at
night. When you are, but I thought some of these claims here involved times in which he wasn't
confined. Well, in which his reply brief, he does allude to a claim for detox from methadone. He does not cite to the complaint there because there is no claim in the complaint that does not relate either to his placement in Mooring, his placement in Racine, or his placement in Outagamie County Jail.
So you're not arguing that if you're a prisoner and you have a complaint about how you were treated when you were on probation and not confined in any way, that that's subject to the act?
If it's a claim about an isolated incident when you are not...
an isolated incident? Why are you adding that to what I said?
Because a continuing deprivation that proceeds through your incarceration and through your confinement may be a different situation.
Why?
If you're complaining about getting hit by a truck when you're on probation...
What does isolated have to do? I don't understand you.
Do you want me to keep going?
You complain about something that happened while you were on probation.
If you were not in...
then you were
a halfway house or right. a jail
so
or
that's
a
not
prison,
covered by the PLRA.
Then I believe that is not covered by the PLRA, yes.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Schwab. Mr. Kleplik? Steeplik?
May it please the court, my name is Tyson Steeplik, and I represent defendant appellee Jim Webb. Mr. Webb was the director of the Moorings program at the time that Mr. Witzke resided there. On behalf of Mr. Webb, I join in the arguments made by Ms. Schwab this morning and ask the court to affirm the district court's dismissal. I think it's very important to note that Mr. Witzke, in his reply brief, acknowledges that when he was at the Moorings program, the client complaint process was available to him. The client complaint process being the one under Wisconsin Administrative Code DOC 328. I think it's also important to note as an initial matter that at the time Witzke filed the complaint in this suit, he was a prisoner at that time. And under the Kerr case that the parties have discussed in the briefs, that's the time we look to determine whether or not a claim can go forward or whether it's precluded by the PLRA. I think that the parties are struggling with two really distinct issues. I think there's two different ones working here. The first one is what kind of confinement or custody or detention gets the PLRA operating. And the other one that becomes difficult in this case is what do you do once prisoners are moved to different facilities and they might be complaining about something that happened two facilities ago, or they might be complaining about something in the current facility they're in. As to the first question, as to the type of confinement that gets the PLRA operating.
Well, that's been discussed, so go to the second question. What is the problem? Yes, how does Wisconsin deal with a situation when people are moved around? So they're in one place and they're complaining about what happened to them in another place.
I think that a really difficult case.
I don't want a really difficult. What's the answer? How does Wisconsin treat this?
The way that Wisconsin should treat this is, This was a continuing violation, a continuing thing that was going on, according to Mr. Witzke. That is, he was deprived of medication from the time he first went into the Outagamie County Jail, through the Mooring program, into the Choice program. When he filed the complaint in this case, he still contended that he was being deprived of medication. The difficult case would be if that didn't continue.
Forget the difficult case. So what's he supposed to do now?
What he's supposed to do at least in order to serve the purposes of
not
the
at least. What is he supposed to
he
do?
He needs to file an administrative complaint at the institution he was at before he filed the complaint in this lawsuit. And if he would have filed that administrative complaint, at least we would have the benefit of finding...
I don't like your at least and your difficult case. You're really hedging. Now look... He starts in the jail, and then he's in the halfway house, now he's in the choice, and then he's in the choice program, now he's somewhere else. Now, in his somewhere else, can he file a complaint that will cover this whole continuing course of, an administrative complaint will cover his whole his whole complaint from the jail through his present confinement?
I will tell the court that I don't know the answer how the Wisconsin correctional system will treat a complaint which makes a complaint about five different institutions. But what we would benefit from here is if he had filed a complaint about the institution he was in, we at least would have gotten a record developed.
If you don't know what Wisconsin will do, then how can we say that he failed to exhaust his remedy?
I'm not sure it's necessary that he be afforded the opportunity, once he is at the Racine Correctional Institution, imprisoned, to complain about every institution he's been at. He had a duty to do that along the way. He should have done it in a timely manner when he was at the Outagamie County Jail, when he was at the mooring program.
What if something happens in your last day at the jail, then you move to a halfway house, so you didn't have time to file anything at the jail? Now what is Wisconsin require you to do?
I don't think we're presented with that situation
of
here.
Of course not.
Obviously not, right?
Why am I asking you?
I think that's the case on the fringes. I think that is...
Well, what's your answer?
That's a very difficult case.
Well, that's not a satisfactory answer. So far what you've told me is you don't know anything about exhaustion of remedies in situations in which a prisoner is moved around and is complaining about some misconduct that occurred throughout his peregrinations.
Do we need to remand?
No, I don't.
So we can get a record?
I think the factual record as to Mr. Witski being in prison or confined or detained and being subject to prison conditions.
We're not talking about that now. We're talking about what remedies did he have to and fail to exhaust.
I don't think that the government defendants or my client here have a duty to show that there were complaint forms laying around, for example, when he was in the mooring program.
That's my question. The question is, what, in your view, was he required by Wisconsin law to do?
He was required to file a complaint with his probation agent when he was in the moorings program, and he did not do that. There's an entire administrative process which starts with the agent and goes up through four steps all the way to the top of the administrator of probation and parole. He failed to do that.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Schneider, how much time does she have? No time. You want a minute for rebuttal?
Just a couple of points on the availability question. If you look at the inmate complaint review system, Whiskey clearly cannot use that process, which is the only one available to him now, to raise all of these claims. It's limited to claims about institutional environment or civil rights grievances, which is clearly limited to claims about discrimination. So he cannot, at this point, exhaust his remedies using that process. And I think Judge Posner was getting at a good point about the fact that he was moved through the system so quickly that it's hard to know at what point, what remedy was he supposed to use at what point, and what was actually available to him at various times. It's easy to see how he had a complaint about moorings, and then all of a sudden he's in the choice program, and is he required at that point to use a process that may or may not be available any longer? It's possible that at the choice program, maybe the administrative remedy was the inmate complaint review system, because if those claims are claims about prison conditions, then he must have been in that prison and required to use that system. So I think that if this case, even if the court determines that this case is about prison conditions, the clear thing to do here is the availability issue is very muddy, and there should be a remand for further development of what was available as a matter of law and what was available as a matter of fact to Mr. Whiskey.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Schneider. And you were appointed, were you?
Sure.
Yes. Well, we thank you for your vigorous efforts.
Thank you.
And thank also the...